we go straight into our Hajj global build-up feature with Hafiz Ibrahim Musa. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Avisab, how are you this afternoon?
Very, very good indeed. Great speaking to you again, Mufti Sahab.
What's this first story that we pick up on this afternoon?
Inshallah, this afternoon we are going to be talking first about the Saudi, what advice has been given to Malaysian Hujjaj about cell phone usage during Hajj. This is a story that has got more to do with, not whether to use a cell phone or not, or to take pictures or not, or selfies, or go live, or whatever it is, but more issue of data roaming costs. And I think it's relevant to basically Hujjaj from all over the world. What's the story basically is that many times people go for Hajj, and essentially when they return from Hajj, they, find themselves being confronted with these huge data roaming costs if they decide to use the roaming option. Now, the Malaysian, cell phone providers have advised their particular Hujjaj going for the journey, either when you go to the Holy Lands, as many people do, swap over to a local SIM card and, do your connections in that way. That's a potential way of avoiding costs, even if you have to communicate with people in your home country. Or the other is, if you are out in the Holy Land and you decide to want to still receive calls from back home, then, just switch off your data roaming completely, but you still enable the option to be able to receive and receive calls and SMSs, but nothing outgoing from your side. They've also made advice in terms of the automatic selection of network providers that should be disabled, and if one wants to use the Wi-Fi option that's available at so many of the hotels and so forth, then one should enable the flight or airplane mode, and thereby they'd be able to use the Wi-Fi without incurring any roaming costs. So just also making an advice that if one is unsure of any of the costs that are incurred in roaming, one should be very clear about establishing those with one's relevant network provider before proceeding. So that's the first story we have this afternoon coming through from the Malaysian camp. Then we have this afternoon the wounds of the Hajj stampede. And it's 1 year on, and everybody will remember the fatal events of last year's Hajj. What is going to be particularly difficult is we hear reports of certain Hujjaj this year who were present in the midst of that stampede, and due to circumstances or due to their own choice or due to wanting to re-perform the Hajj, whatever it is, they have gone back for Hajj, and those scenes are playing back in their minds. One particular Haji from Nigeria, for instance, mentioning that everybody around him passed away and miraculously he survived. Another sister from Chad, I think it was, saying that every time she walks somewhere in those places of Hajj, she gets, these flashbacks of the people who passed away around her or the screams that she heard. So it's very traumatizing for these people who are reliving the journey. But on the institutional side, what's the institutional trauma? Obviously, there's this big Hajj fallout between Saudi Arabia and Iran. And many people try to reduce this Hajj stampede into a fight between, Saudi Arabia and Iran. That's just one part of it. And the Iranian leader just the other day, went on this whole tirade. His speech is all over the internet at the moment. How Saudis had murdered the pilgrims, and how the leadership of the Hajj has to change. But that obscures the picture into just a confrontation between Saudi Arabia and Iran, whereas pilgrims from all over the world had passed away during this particular pilgrimage. So the issues are, 1 year later, that firstly, no accurate count of this disaster has been released. The Saudis have said 700, whereas counts from countries all over the world that have been compiled put that at more than three times or more, that particular number. And so it's not only these numbers coming from Iraq, other countries around the world, and many people have not been sure exactly as to where those who have passed away, exactly their identities or where they've been buried. So those wounds still remain open on that side. And, there were two disasters last year. The one was the crane crash in Makkah. And the crane crash in Makkah, the Saudis were extremely transparent about it. They released updates to the media as it happened, and people were put on trial. But when it came to the, MENA disaster, we didn't see something similar. And some observers have suggested that because, the responsibility for the crane disaster was clearly probably in the hands of the constructors, it could be a lot of that way. But when it came to the MENA tragedy, the authorities had to take greater responsibility, and hence there's not too much transparency. But even though they haven't admitted, the Saudi authorities, any public responsibility for this, or haven't shown too much remorse, what we have seen is behind the scenes there have been efforts underfoot to change things. For instance, there have been reports that the streets in MENA will be expanded a bit. Some of the government ministries that have been housed in MENA will be, removed completely to other areas outside MENA. So these moves seem to suggest that within, the echelons of Saudi power, there are discussions, but obviously it's not the desired level of transparency or the desired level of accountability that Muslims all around the world would like to see. The penultimate story this afternoon, Muftab, we have 450 Nigerian generals who are going for Hajj this year. And they're taking this as a very special opportunity. Nigeria is in a security crisis. There's the problem of Boko Haram in the north, and there's other problems as well, security-wise. So these generals are taking this as a serious opportunity to seek divine help, obviously first for themselves, but for their nation. And they're encouraging all fellow Nigerians who are on Hajj to pray for their country and pray for the success of the efforts of their president. In addition, they are there as normal Hujjaj, but these 450 soldiers are also going to be available for any sort of assistance that's going to have to be rendered to fellow Hujjaj. And lastly, I've got another story this afternoon from Nigeria, and inshallah this particular story is about the transportation of Zamzam water. We've heard from Saudi reports from last year that the empty planes, when people come for Hajj, many of those planes return back to their home countries empty. And to make more sense out of it, rather send some cargo back on those planes. And ideal cargo to send back is Zamzam. So apparently Nigerian Hajj authority has already sent back all the necessary Zamzam to Nigerian airports, ready for pickup when the Nigerian pilgrims will be coming home. And this is going to make a big difference for the Nigerian pilgrims, so they won't have to worry about carrying around the Zamzam. There won't be queries about excess baggage, so that stress of carrying the Zamzam will be out. And I believe it's something that has been is going to be done for several of the major countries. I don't know if everybody's happy about it. Sometimes you feel more contented if you're carrying that Zamzam personally, yes, in your hand. But that's the new system that has been instituted.
I think it's really a clever initiative, and it would then alleviate the pressure that is experienced at the time of departure. So perhaps other countries can follow suit in that regard. Afisab, jazakumullah khair for your time this afternoon.
Shukran jazeelan, wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.